Get ready to dive deep into the world of early Christianity with the Apostle Paul. We're going to unpack this academic paper you gave me on 2 Corinthians 10. I mean, there are some seriously interesting insights in here.
It is fascinating.
I know. We're talking about how Paul, this like passionate preacher, deals with some pretty intense pushback from the church in Corinth.
Yeah. It's a really interesting section of his second letter to the Corinthians. You see him grappling with these accusations of weakness and questions about his authority as an apostle.
So it's like church politics, but ancient style.
Exactly. Church politics at its finest.
So these folks in Corinth are basically trying to take Paul down a notch. What were they trying to do?
Well, they were trying to discredit him in the eyes of the Corinthians.
Yeah.
They wanted to make him look bad, basically. And some of them were even like mimicking the lifestyles of other big time religious leaders at the time to gain more influence. It's almost like they were trying to out-apostle Paul.
Out-apostle Paul. Like a competition.
Kind of. They were judging him for his simpler lifestyle, criticizing him as weak and timid in person. They claimed he only acted all bold and strong when he was far away.
Interesting. Because from what I've read, Paul wasn't exactly known for backing down from a fight. So how does he respond to all of this?
That's what's so intriguing about this passage. His approach is, well, unexpected. He turns to meekness.
Meekness.
Yeah. He describes himself using words like meekness and gentleness, which on the surface seems a little off given the situation, right?
It does seem a bit out of character. He's defending his ministry, his whole life's work. So why meekness?
Well, I think that's the genius of it. These words, meekness and gentleness, carried huge weight in early Christianity. They were often used to describe, well, Christ himself.
Ah, I see. So Paul is intentionally connecting his actions to Jesus.
Precisely. He's aligning himself with Christ's model of, you could call it, gentle restraint, even while facing this intense persecution. It's like he's challenging the Corinthians' whole idea of what true strength and leadership look like.
Because they were buying into the image of these flashy super apostles with all their bragging and their fancy status.
Right, exactly. But Paul refuses to play that game. He famously says, "The weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh." This is where his whole analogy of spiritual warfare comes in.
Oh, yeah, that's a famous line. The weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh.
Mm.
But he's using it in a very specific way here, right?
Yes. While this verse is often used when people talk about like spiritual warfare in general, Paul is using it directly to address how he's dealing with these false teachers in Corinth. He's not talking about literal weapons. It's all about truth and humility and relying on God.
Okay, so then what are these strongholds he's aiming to demolish? Is he talking about actual, like, fortresses?
Not literal ones, no. He's talking about the arguments, the faulty reasoning that these folks opposing him are using, all that stuff they've raised up against the knowledge of God. He's talking about pride and worldly wisdom and all these distorted versions of the gospel that we're spreading around.
So this idea of spiritual weapons and taking down strongholds, how do we apply that today? I mean, we might not be going up against false apostles, but I think we can all relate to dealing with opposition in tough situations.
That's a great point. This is where it gets really relevant, actually. Paul is giving us a framework for approaching these tough disagreements, especially when our faith or our deeply held beliefs are involved.
So instead of, you know, fighting fire with fire, we should use different tools.
Exactly. Don't stoop to the level of personal attacks and trying to look better than someone else. Paul is all about using these spiritual weapons, like we talked about.
Truth, humility. Did I miss any?
And the willingness to persuade, not force people.
Right. It's like what you were saying before about gentle restraint, almost.
Sure.
So are you saying that Paul's example encourages a different kind of strength, one that's not all about aggression and dominance?
Yes. It's this radical concept that really challenges our culture's typical definition of power, which is often so limited.
I love that. Now, the paper you sent also dives into this whole concept of boasting, which seems like something Paul's opponents were really into.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me more about that.
Well, this is where that competitive culture of the time really comes into play. These false teachers, they were all about self-promotion, boasting about their family line, their accomplishments, who they knew anything to make themselves seem more impressive than Paul.
It's kind of like what we see today, right?
Yeah.
Especially with social media and everything. That constant pressure to compare and compete, even in religious circles.
Absolutely. And Paul completely rejects this type of boasting. He emphasizes that any accomplishments he has are achieved in the Lord, meaning they're not about him.
But about what God has done through him.
Yes.
So it's not about downplaying his work, but about shifting the focus and giving the credit where it belongs to God.
Exactly. There's a quote from Pelagius, who was around during Paul's time, that captures this beautifully. He said, "No one is more foolish than the person who thinks that he alone belongs to Christ."
Wow. Powerful. So basically, these false teachers were so caught up in their own importance that they lost sight of the bigger picture. But what does boasting in the Lord look like for us? How do we apply that in our own lives?
That's the question, isn't it? And it all starts with a shift in perspective.
It's like a whole different way of thinking, moving away from "look what I've done" to "look what God has done through me."
Yeah. It's all about recognizing that everything, our gifts, talents, accomplishments, they all come from God.
So we can take the focus off of our ego and redirect it back to God's grace.
Exactly. It changes how we see our achievements. Instead of thinking we earned everything through our own effort, it becomes more about seeing these things as gifts, opportunities to serve God.
That sounds incredibly freeing. Like, it takes all the pressure off of having to constantly prove yourself.
It does, and it cultivates humility, which is so important for spiritual growth. Remember how Paul starts his defense by appealing to the meekness and gentleness of Christ? It's not just a nice saying. He's establishing a fundamental principle for Christian leadership.
So true strength isn't about self-promotion. It's about recognizing that we depend on God.
Yes. And this is reflected in how Paul describes his ministry. He talks about using spiritual weapons to demolish strongholds. And remember, his authority comes from God, not from human standards.
Right. And he's not afraid to be firm when he needs to be. He even mentions being ready to punish every act of disobedience once the Corinthians get back on track.
That's true. But even in that firmness, there's a sense of restraint. He's not trying to crush them. He's giving them the space to repent and come back to Christ.
Like a loving parent who disciplines their child because they care, not because they're angry.
Perfect analogy. And it shows another important part of Paul's leadership, his pastoral heart. He's not just fixated on winning arguments. He really cares for the Corinthians and wants them to grow in their faith.
He's balancing this strong conviction with deep compassion.
Exactly. And I think that's so important for anyone in a leadership position, whether it's in a church or a business or even a family. True leadership requires strength and humility, conviction and compassion.
It's about serving others, not ruling over them.
Precisely. Which honestly is still a pretty radical idea. It goes against our culture's obsession with power and status and self-promotion.
We've talked about Paul using the words meekness and gentleness, his idea of spiritual warfare, and this concept of boasting in the Lord. What else stands out to you from this passage in 2 Corinthians?
Well, the historical context is really important here. Paul is writing to a very specific community that's dealing with specific problems. These false teachers are undermining him. And there's also this whole question of how Gentile Christians relate to Jewish traditions. So while the principles we're unpacking are timeless, we have to remember the specific situation Paul is addressing.
It's not just a bunch of ideas floating around. It's a real life letter dealing with real life problems.
Exactly. And that makes it all the more relevant to us today. Because even though our challenges might be different, we all face times when our faith is tested, when we have to stand up for what we believe, and when we might be tempted to compromise or give in to the pressures of the world.
It's like we're all in our own spiritual battles in a way.
You could say that. And Paul's example in 2 Corinthians 10 shows us how to engage in those battles. He reminds us that true strength comes from humility, that our boasting should always be in the Lord, and that the weapons we use should be spiritual, not worldly.
And that even in the midst of conflict, we shouldn't forget about our call to serve others with love and compassion.
Absolutely.
We've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive. This passage from 2 Corinthians 10 is clearly full of insights about leadership, spiritual warfare, and what it means to follow Christ. Before we wrap up, what are your final thoughts for our listeners? What does all this mean for them?
I think what's fascinating here is how Paul handles this difficult situation within the church. He's dealing with opposition, criticism, even people betraying him, but he doesn't react with anger or get all defensive. Instead, he takes an approach that blends humility with this unwavering conviction.
He reminds us that true strength can be found in unexpected places, and that our boasting should always point to something bigger than ourselves. How might this shift our perspective on the way we handle disagreements, or even how we see our own accomplishments?
Paul's example challenges us to think about where we place our confidence. Are we trying to build ourselves up, or are we trying to lift up something bigger than ourselves?
That's a huge question. It really makes you examine your motivations and what you consider true success. It's so easy to like put people like Paul up on a pedestal, you know,
right.
And forget that there are actual people who dealt with real problems. Seeing him wrestle with these issues makes his example so much more powerful.
Yeah, it really does. It shows us that humility and depending on God aren't just these like high-minded ideas. They're practical tools for dealing with the messiness of life and leadership.
It's true.
Paul shows us that even when you're facing opposition, you can still have both humility and conviction. It's like he's reminding us that real strength can come from unexpected places and that the things we boast about should always point to something bigger than ourselves.
Yeah. And it raises some pretty big questions about leadership, authority, and what it means to stay true to your calling, even when you're facing criticism.
It is. It reminds us that even the most influential people in history dealt with, you know, normal human struggles, and how they dealt with those challenges can teach us a lot today.
There's so much more we could talk about from this passage and from all of Paul's letters. If you're interested, I really encourage you to explore the world of early Christianity some more. You might be surprised by what you find.
I think what makes this passage so powerful is that it shows us Paul's heart. You know, he's not just worried about winning arguments or proving he's in charge. He really cares about the Corinthians and wants them to thrive in their faith.
That pastoral heart, that's what makes him such a strong and lasting figure. He combines this intellectual depth with compassion and genuine care for people.
Yeah, and that combination is something we can all aim for, no matter what our role is in life. Whether we're leading a team, helping a friend, or just trying to live out our faith, Paul's example in 2 Corinthians 10 gives us a guide for handling challenges with grace and humility, but also with real conviction.
It's like a reminder that true strength isn't about promoting yourself or worldly power. It's about knowing we depend on something bigger than ourselves. And that's a message that still resonates today.
It does. And I think that's why digging into these ancient texts can be so enriching. They don't just offer historical insights. They also give us timeless wisdom that can help us navigate our own complicated lives.
So as you go about your week, we encourage you to think about Paul's example in 2 Corinthians 10. How can his approach to conflict, leadership, and boasting in the Lord inspire you? How can you use those spiritual weapons of truth, humility, and persuasion to build others up instead of tearing them down?
Those are great questions to think about. And as you wrestle with them, remember that you're not alone. The same God who helped Paul face his challenges is there to help you too.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep searching for truth.